Well, this is Brian Skull, the musical movie critic to my right.
Ronnie Haynes.
To his right.
Dave Matt.
We're Yahoos with the microphone here to talk about the special extended edition of The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. We have the New Line Cinema. New Line Cinema presents a Wingnut Films production.
Not too many title cards.
Coming up, we're going to have a completely black screen. The evocative music by Howard Shore and the haunting sounds of a language we haven't really heard before. Language completely devised by Mr. Tolkien, and as the Lady Galadriel, as we later find out, is relaying the history of the One Ring. Probably one of the finest, most spectacular openings I've ever seen. You're the first use of the ring theme by Howard Shore.
The music is genius.
I'm just in awe of what Howard Shore is doing with this.
Yeah,
I mean, this, I really do believe that when all is said and done, I think we're going to be listening to maybe, if it's not superior, at least the equal of the original Star Wars trilogy in terms of music goes. But really a smart way to set up the ring and set up the history of the ring, sort of get people like myself who was not oriented, who was not familiar with the story to start out with, get them interested in the story, get them immersed in the world of Middle-earth.
How much debate was over the original prologue?
I think it ended up being like one of the last things that they did, because it was a matter of trying to figure out how to do it. I think at one point they were talking about Frodo doing it, and that just didn't really work.
Right.
Then it was Gandalf, or I don't know the exact order, but I know they were talking about Frodo, they were talking about Gandalf, and finally they came up on the idea of having Galadriel do it. And
which makes the most sense.
Yeah. Which makes the most sense, yes. Sorry, I told you I would not repeat you, and I'm trying not to.
We'll work on that.
Wow, this is a really fantastic beginning. I mean, this is so much story, you know, and they're just laying it all out.
This is a far cry for those of you who are familiar with the Ralph Bakshi animated version of Lord of the Rings. The prologue in that is just, I mean, you feel nothing. It's just, you lack the scope and the vision of this movie. Of course, they had more budget constraints that Peter Jackson has decidedly not had on these movies. But
and you would think, even though the animated movie was made a considerable amount of time before this, you would think more imagination could have been put into it.
Well,
and
it's not so much. The animation, admittedly, in that movie doesn't bother me so much as the way the story is told. Mm-hmm. I really feel like the story has done a great injustice, because it's sort of like it plays like a greatest hits of this story.
Yeah.
And it's trying to put so much into like 2 hours that there's just no way it can do it justice. Mm-hmm. This is the only way they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see an excellent animated version of Lord of the Rings being done, you know, especially now, but, I mean, I think we're basically seeing the definitive screen adaptation of Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no question. I mean, Peter Jackson's a fan of the books. I mean, it shows in every frame.
I think anyone who contributed to the movie was just as passionate as he was about the quality of the storytelling.
I mean, the undertaking alone, the amount of time that is going into this.
Right.
I mean, you have to be passionate about the material in order to even commit that amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just absolutely remarkable. I mean, it's like making a TV series. You really have to put a commitment into it, you know, to really get the best thing. And
we're about to see our first piece of extended material here.
Yeah, because at first you just saw the orcs jumping, and then you saw him face down in the water, I believe. if I remember this sequence correctly. You didn't see this. You didn't see him putting on the ring, him becoming invisible. And
because there was some debate over whether or not anyone who wasn't familiar with the story would question why Sauron doesn't disappear when he's wearing the ring.
That's right. I think I do remember that in one of the commentaries. I think that was the Peter Jackson commentary, probably.
Mm-hmm. And supposedly there was some debate over whether or not someone who wasn't familiar with the material would question why.
Well, I mean, you could almost like sort of simplify that by saying, well, I mean, he's the one who created the ring.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, just it sort of has this effect on people who didn't create the ring, everybody else who touches it, but with him, I mean, it basically just...
Yeah, it would have made sense to me. I wouldn't have questioned it, I don't think.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, I think it's one of those cuts where it's like, it's something you'd like to have in there, but I think it's inevitably something that, you know, for the sake of a theatrical version,
and time,
it just got cut for that reason. But it's nice. What a great tease on Gollum.
Yeah.
I love the way they tease you on Gollum. You don't quite see him, but you see sort of the possibilities of what we could see in the Two Towers.
Yeah, I was always wondering how they're going to do.
And admittedly, if there's one thing that I really like about the animated version, I really think they did a good job getting the look of Gollum
right.
I mean, it's not perfect, but it's a pretty good interpretation. So, it's a lot better than the animated Return of the King, which he's basically a frog creature.
The more you talk about the animated films, the more I want to see them just to see how bad they really are.
Really, really bad. This is really bad movie.
Yeah.
Really painful.
Ian Holm is Bilbo Baggins.
Yes. The Sweet Hereafter. And, shoot, I'm embarrassed. I can't think of more. Sweet Hereafter and Existence, David Cronenberg's Existence, yeah, small part in.
That's great how the mountains morph into the map.
Yes.
I mean, they didn't have to show as much of the beginning here as they're showing, but I mean, they're just like laying out the story and just making it, this is great.
And we have a prologue following a prologue here, kind of story.
Yeah.
But
well,
this is more extended material.
And this is sort of closer to how the book actually starts.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really learn a lot about hobbits in like the first chapter or so before you get into the story proper with Bilbo.
Almost more than you are to that, bro.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend to know anything about the books because I've never read them. I've never dared to, you know, delve into that without really having a sense of commitment to them, so, you know, I've yet to have even picked one up, but I do know that I like this little touch here that Bilbo calls the first chapter of his book concerning hobbits, which is the name of the first chapter of Fellowship of the Ring, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know if it's the name of the first chapter. I know there's a section in Lord of the Rings that's concerning hobbits.
Okay.
That's where that comes from. But I love this introduction to the Shire and Hobbiton. It's just such a wonderful thing, beautifully scored by Howard Shore, who is going to be mentioned ad nauseum for his extraordinary work in this, rightfully so. It's one of the finest scores I've ever heard. It's gotten better every time I've listened to it. Just extraordinarily beautiful work. There's a wonderful spirit to Ian Holm's Bilbo. Just really, just a beautifully played role for as little as he's in the movie, really.
Right.
He just does a very good job in it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him like trying to do, you know, the Hobbit.
I know.
Now, Ian Holm played Gandalf in the radio drama of Lord of the Rings, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
Yes.
Yeah, he did in a radio version of Lord of the Rings, he did play Gandalf, yeah. I don't think it was a strict... I don't think it's the only radio version of Dobbit they've done, but...
I thought that was profoundly interesting, though, when I heard that, though. I was kind of satisfied.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of new footage here over the new
voiceover
by Bilbo.
Sticklebats, what is that boy?
This is the original place where we started.
This is the original title card as well.
Prologue. Frodo, played by Elijah Wood, who... I mean, it's in plain sight of everybody, but really has not gotten the recognition I felt like he deserved. I mean, you know, everybody's talked about, like, Viggo Mortensen and Ian McKellen, obviously, Oscar-nominated, and Sean Astin, but, I mean, Elijah Wood is...
He's the heart film.
He's the soul of the film.
Mm-hmm.
He's the soul of the film.
I would consider Gandalf the soul of the story, but, you know... That's debatable.
You could have that debatable. You could look at that separately.
You know, I've always thought that Frodo was the heart, Gandalf was the soul, and...
Well, Samwise has to be in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Samwise, I think, has to be in there somewhere. So is Aragorn, obviously.
I think just this whole beginning part right here with Gandalf is just sort of the best acting I've seen, really.
Mm-hmm. It's extraordinary. I mean... Fantasy films are not, and big visual effects films are not known for their acting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you can tell that this is not your normal
right.
effects film. I mean, right away you really get that. And Elijah Wood, who was previously in Forever Young with Mel Gibson, The Good Son with Macaulay Culkin. Robert Rodriguez is the faculty, and I know he's in a ton of other stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, a very good friend of Harry Noble's over at Ankle News.
Yeah, Elijah Wood's a film geek at heart, I think.
Yeah,
from what I've heard about him, it's such a great set.
Mm-hmm.
Back end. I think Peter Jackson said that he has all the set pieces and storage, and someday, eventually, he's going to build his own version of Bag End to retire in.
I wouldn't doubt it. It would be much deserved.
Yeah.
Much deserved.
There's some more added material.
Yeah.
Bilbo, and supposedly taken out just because... It made him appear as a shadier character than you would have wanted to have seen him so early on in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was a smart thing to take out of the theatrical version. Because, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the special extended edition is basically the geek version. It's for those of us who love the theatrical version and just want to see more. And, I mean, it's obviously for purists of the book, because there's a lot of stuff from the book that's reintroduced in here, too. So, I just always love this music by Howard Shore. It just absolutely soars in this.
We were talking about how it's not coming across as your run-of-the-mill effects event fantasy film, and... I'm just now noticing that, you know, this had such a extraordinary beginning and introduction, the prologue and everything, and, you know, the origin of the ring and everything, and we're already into this very simple human story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it starts out, you know, I think the inspiration for the prologue, as said by Peter Jackson, somewhat anyway, was, you know, a James Bond movie. They wanted to open it up with a real big action sequence, and now we're into this human story that, I mean, I've already forgotten, you know. I mean, it's still very much on the tip of my brain, the beginning and the prologue and the, but...
But you're already sucked into the...
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Very much so.
You're talking about my favorite line there, Haynes, the, Ukraine to the instances about the dragon. I was barely involved.
I love that. Delivered by Ian McKellen. Oh, yeah. I mean,
you're
referring to the incident of the dragon.
You know,
I'm barely involved.
In the Hobbit.
Yeah.
That's great.
I've been getting into the Hobbit. And
that's a great book.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, if you haven't read Lord of the Rings, read The Hobbit.
Yeah, read The Hobbit first.
Yeah.
Oh, Howard Shore's music.
Listen to that music.
Oh, oh my God. I mean, just...
And something on...
This music just really sucked me in the first time I saw it.
And something else I really admire is that, you know, you got to see a movie that's based on a really beloved novel or a really... beloved book, and you know, I love noticing how the characters and the way the movie's executed looks like it's right out of a book.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's, you know, I felt that way about Harry Potter, and I feel that way just as much about Lord of the Rings, that this looks like it came right out of the pages of a really great.
One of the things I'm noticing about this for the first time is that I love how when you have like reunions with the characters, like the reunion with Gandalf and Frodo, and this reunion right here with Gandalf and Bilbo, I mean, you really get a sense of just something wonderful, and you barely know these characters.
And that you do get the sense that there's a history
with
these characters.
And...
That happened on the day.
Yeah.
That was actually a happy accident. Happy accident there. That's just the greatness of Ian McKellen. He just kept going.
Yeah, bro. Ian McKellen of Gods and Monsters, Husker Nell made for that.
And recently X-Men.
Yep.
So the first two X-Men movies. And I'm guessing we're going to see him again in X-Men 3.
Ooh, if he wasn't in that movie, the movie wouldn't be nearly as good as they are.
I'm really enjoying the fact that, you know, these older actors, you know, are getting such a boost in their fan base, you know, Christopher Lee, Ian McKellen, you know, because they're being reintroduced into, you know, the lives of fans of big movies and movies that are meant to, you know, span generations and everything, you know.
Yeah.
I'm really tickled to like see, you know, Christopher Lee in Star Wars and you know Ian McKellen, you know, just these actors that have been with us and you know for so long and are just now forming a new fan base with you know these movies that are becoming.
Well, Ian McKellen, if I'm not mistaken, has his own website.
Right.
And I think he was. You know, I think he was, like, talking about Lord of the Rings, and, I mean, I know that if they ever decide to do The Hobbit, I know he wants to get on board. He's more than happy to get on board, and, I mean,
there's still debate over whether or not Peter Jackson will direct, though, because he's committed to King Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Remake.
Which is actually funny because of the fact that that actually is something I think he's wanted to do even more in Lord of the Rings. I mean, that's basically his lifelong passion film.
Which will... Because
King Kong was the film that got him interested in film. And...
Which I'm not altogether sure whether or not I will see a remake of King Kong.
The 1970s version, I don't think too many people would. But in the hands of Peter Jackson, I mean, he's shown me nothing in these movies to doubt him.
Right.
As far as his command of the medium in terms of like visual effects and stuff like that.
Right.
He's going to give us a great King Kong movie, I believe. And he's going to give us something fresh and original.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
There's another great relationship moment right here.
I love what Ian McKellen does with the cheeks. At first, I honestly thought at first that the cheeks were computer generated there. I honestly thought that little... That is so great.
Isn't that something from the book, too, right there?
I think it is, yeah. I think it is.
right?
Mm-hmm. At first, when I first saw this, I mean, this was really the first time I was getting to know this story because I had gotten through all of, like, 50 pages of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't even really scratched the surface of the story when I first saw this. And admittedly, I felt like it moved too slowly to start out with. But, I mean, the more I've seen it, the more it's like you get so used to, you just get so immersed in these characters and stuff like that. I mean, the slowness of this beginning part just goes away, and I mean, you just sort of settle in with it and just enjoy yourself.
There's some cool effects like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sure. You weren't getting that in the book.
Academy Award winner for Best Visual Effects in 2001.
Yep. This is a little...
Some of these kids are Peter Jackson's kids, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is reference to The Hobbit as well. Stone! I'm sorry. Unfortunately, I can't think of what else?
Billy Boyd and Dominique
Mulhannigan, I think that's his name.
Mm-hmm. My two favorite characters here.
No,
but I've listened to the writer and director commentaries, and I think it's a reference to the book anyway, because it's mentioned in the book, if I'm not mistaken, according to the commentary anyway, that Gandalf has a firework that turns into a dragon.
Mm-hmm. I like that little line by Bilbo. My, you have been productive, haven't you? For all those kids to go by.
This is
a wonderful addition here, because I think they mentioned on one of the commentaries how it's like, This is really the only scene you get with Frodo and Bilbo
before
Rivendell.
Before Rivendell.
And it was cut, and it's like, you know, you really get a sense as to, you really get some insight into Bilbo's character, you know.
And the scene is, you know, touching, but it's not, it's not touchy-feely.
Yeah.
Which I like.
I like that. But even Catcher's Old Brew? No. Well, yeah, but
and plus they, you know, they make a reference to the relatives that he has that they're chasing because, you know, they want to stop, and they make a big deal out of that in the beginning of the book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
According to the commentary, don't hobbits give presents on their birthday?
Oh, shoot! I can't remember.
I'm just gonna, you know, remind everyone that I know nothing about the book. I never read them, but anything I do know.
Time Brian, to bring up. All right,
Brian. Brian's going to the source here, but according to the writer director commentary, hobbits give presents on their birthday, and also, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah, Brian, if you can actually find that.
Yeah, that would be good. But also, according
to you, if you can actually find it, there's no way.
According to the commentary, it's Frodo's birthday as well as Bilbo's.
Yeah.
That much I do know.
With the first part of this movie, this fellowship really has had the most change to it from the book to the screen.
Right.
Especially
of course,
in the first half. And the second half is actually pretty faithful.
Yeah, the second half is
better. But the first half, getting to Rivendell, is actually the most changed part, especially the aspects in the Shire of reasons we'll talk about.
Here's a reference to the animated.
Yeah, there was a shot in there that, you know, they homaged the Bakshi version.
But even though there was a lot of changes from the beginning, it's still pretty close enough to be authentic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
This is like exact dialogue from the book right here.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to bend some way things go. Oh, yeah,
it's been a huge chunk in this.
Yeah.
We're going to try really hard not to just sit here and watch the movie because it's so hard not to do that.
Yeah.
I promise, though, but according to the writer-director commentary with Peter Jackson and
Fran Walsh and Philip LaPlante,
Hobbits give gifts on their birthday.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah, so thank you very much.
What? Thank you very much. What?
Here comes one of my favorite scenes.
How was under the first chapter concerning Hobbits section?
I don't know.
Let me look under concerning Hobbits.
Because I thought I remember him talking about getting gifts when he was talking about his stuff.
Yeah.
And they had the... Another people
one of my
page.
Favorite scenes right here. Right. I suppose you think that was terribly clever. There's a pretty interesting extra on the DVD of Peter Jackson acting this out.
When they first
got the set built, Peter Jackson took and some of his producers acted this out with some.
Mm-hmm.
It was
pretty entertaining. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily an entertaining the same way this is.
Yeah, exactly.
But still.
That's Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh on the mantle there in the pictures.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know some stuff.
Keep it.
He's a great acting, right?
Yeah. I mean, he really does a good job of doing the shifts in tone with the character.
Transitioning from good Bilbo to evil Bilbo. Because, I mean, yeah, that just kind of flows the book, but to be able to make that not look stupid on screen is good.
Yeah. Because the movie has to keep its momentum and everything. It's the first time we hear the ring referred to as my precious.
Mm-hmm.
But not by you. Goodness.
First with the Gandalf power here.
Yeah.
Well, see, Peter Jackson's not a huge fan of magic.
Right.
Suppose, I mean,
you know, and when you read the book, I've always wondered, you know, if Gandalf is supposed to be some type of wizard,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. But, you know, I mean, he's not doing real, you know, like magic as you typically see in, you know, in any of the other fantasy novels. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of very real, very, very down to earth, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's not magic in the traditional sense.
It's not so much that, I mean, he's a magician,
but,
you know, is, I think, the wizard is, you know, more wisdom.
Right.
You know, it's more, wizards are more about the wisdom, I think, in Tolkien's book and Peter Jackson's version.
Because,
I mean, you sort of get that idea in the books, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, you have the moments, you know, you have the wizards fight between Gandalf and Saruman.
And, there, you know, there's hardly, there's,
but,
you know, it doesn't even look like it's a wizard's duel as much as it's just like Peter Jackson was saying in his commentary, you know, just two old guys throwing each other around the room.
Yeah.
Magnet
floor,
yeah. I mean, but I'm so into the story now that,
mm-hmm.
I've already almost forgotten that, you know, there's such a weight to everything that's happening right now. I'm just absolutely submersed into this human story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I've almost completely forgotten that there's a real adventure element to it.
Yeah, I mean,
but still,
at every point in time, you always get the sense that there's something a bit more between Bilbo and Gandalf, then you have, you know, this yeah, you see that there is history there.
And of course, if you know the Hobbit, right, you know that history.
If you're referring to that incident with the dragon,
I was barely involved.
You all over that.
Oh God, that beautiful line reading right there. Absolutely wonderful line reading.
I saw him there. So I guess, is the eye in the movie, the images of the eye, is that pretty faithful to the book? Because
they do discuss the eye being seen.
They hint at, but I mean, you don't really.
I don't know if you get a full description. I think you do.
I'm sure somewhere down the line you do.
Yeah, yeah. When they show in the movie during the last battle, when he's up there with it, you get that description of.
Yeah,
because I can only imagine what you know.
Definitely don't get as many classes.
Yeah, I can only imagine the way an image like that would be described in the book, and then how you conceptualize it for a film.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's the audacity of that.
And
I remember Peter Jackson saying, I believe, during sort of like a 20 questions type thing on Any Cool News, that he allowed like fans to write in questions, and you know, Harry Knowles would relay them to him, and you know, he'd answer them. That it's like Sauron was one of the trickiest things, trying to, how do you visualize somebody you really don't.
Right.
I mean, he's a presence, but you don't really get like descriptions of him. It's really not until the Return of the King where you really get the sense that Sauron becomes sort of a character in the books. Mm. Except when you're having the history of the ring relayed in, I believe it's, well, I think it's coming up, but yeah. Now, this is where some of the real big changes in terms of the story happened. Actually, isn't it 18 years that passed by?
Yeah, it's been a while.
From the time of Bilbo's birthday to the time he comes back from from finding out about the ring. Yeah, I mean, that's something I noticed. It's like, wow, 18 years passed? Because that part I hadn't read before I saw this movie, so saw the movie, so it's like, wow, that is a big change.
Well, how old is Frodo at the beginning of the book?
Frodo, he's like 33 or something.
Yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
like 50 when the Fellowship gets together.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, Bilbo lives to be 111,
right,
so I mean, you know, the timeline for the idea is they're healthier longer.
Yeah.
Bibness, Jareth right here. I mean, you know, this is one of those parts where he doesn't. There's an added urgency to the story by taking out those 18 years that really does benefit the story tremendously.
Right.
Because, you know.
Man, I mean, that would have been hard to do.
Yeah. And getting Bilbo and getting Frodo out of the Shire takes much longer.
Right.
Much
longer.
With the change we'll discuss later.
All right.
There's an unfortunate change, admittedly, in my opinion, but it's one that works pretty well in the book. Movie.
It's one that would probably pretty much had to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's almost no way to do that.
It's very hard to do and sort of, like, look at Merry and Pippin the same way.
Right.
The way it's in the book.
Right.
Because, well, I'll go ahead and say it. What happens is there's sort of a conspiracy between Merry, Pippin, and Sam, and Gandalf to get Frodo out of the Shire. They're aware of the situation. They don't just Frodo and Sam just don't run into Merry and Pippin like they do in the movie.
Huh.
And so you have all of this time passing where they move all of his stuff to someplace else.
Wow.
Stuff like, yeah. I mean, you know, it's really in detail. I love the music for the Rays.
I've always thought that the Rays kind of resemble the demon in what's that movie? Peter
Brightner.
Frighteners.
Yeah.
I noticed that
when I saw the Frighteners after this movie, and it's like, this is a wonderful addition because sort of you sort of get the idea that sort of a little
what Hobbit life is like.
Homage to the fact that there are love songs in The Lord of the Rings, and unfortunately they're not in the movies.
But are
that song's been there, but
they are unfortunately in the animated versions, are they not?
What I think there are. It's not unfortunate in The Lord of the Rings.
Let me just
say about The Return of the King. Orcs singing, I don't think ever happened in the book.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it's been a few months since I finished Return of the King, but it doesn't happen. Like, 35 minutes into this movie, and we're coming up to another, like, one of my top five favorite uses of the Hobbit theme, or the Shire theme, or whatever you want to call it. I call it the Hobbit theme. I mean,
well, you know what, it's, I've listened to Howard Shore's commentary, and he refers to it as, it starts out as a theme for the Shire, and then it almost becomes the sole hymn of the film. As the story progresses, you know,
it's sort of like a friendship theme. I mean, it's, you can look at it different ways. I sort of look at it as the Hobbit slash friendship theme, you know, because it really is a Hobbit theme because of the fact that you primarily hear it with Frodo and Sam and Merry and Pippin.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear it with, I mean, the Fellowship. You've got your own another theme from them. So. I really look at it as more of a Hobbit theme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not one to question Howard Shore. He won an Oscar, deservingly so, for this film.
Unfortunately, he wasn't nominated for, and he wasn't unfortunately nominated for Two Towers, which was a bit of a surprise. But you know, that just goes into the whole controversy.
We can talk about sequel scores being nominated for Oscars until we're blue in the face,
yeah.
And I won't do that because of the fact that.
Well, for one, this isn't the Two Towers.
This isn't the Two Towers, and secondly, well, I don't feel like getting into it. yeah, that's
this is a
never
great,
good sign. When somebody says, there's nothing. Oh, wait a minute.
This is a great image of the elf being on, reflecting off Elijah Wood's face. I love that. Some of the imagery is just so inventive.
The entire film is just full of inventive imagery.
Right.
I mean, you listen to the commentaries and how many different types of effects went into this, and you would think, good God.
Yeah. Physical effects, digital effects.
Miniature, or bigatures, as they're called.
Yeah.
It's just, models, I mean, you know, you name it. Makeup effects.
What is this working at now? Was like scale or force perspective?
Force perspective.
Yeah, that's another.
And this, I believe, in this interaction right here, in the book is when we first find out the history of the ring. Am I right, or is that Rivendell in the Council of Elrond? I thought they went through it with. No, wait a minute. I remember what goes on here. This is where we. There's a dialogue between Frodo and Gandalf in Moria that was actually here in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought you did get the history of the ring in this part.
Yeah. I mean, I know you got something because, I mean, this is the throwing it in the fire. And that's all straight from the book. So.
But I mean, I thought he went into the history of the ring, like the entire thing.
Okay.
Break
out
the book.
I don't remember.
Break out the book.
This is a great use of the ring theme right here. That theme is just fantastic.
Yeah. It has to be because he discusses. I mean, this dialogue right here is almost straight from the book. You know, discussing how the ring wants to go back to his master and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
trailer.
Yeah. Like, isn't it? Who said on the cast commentary that like, by the 30th time you see this, you did that trailer, you were just sick of
you just
hearing
you,
that?
You were
like,
just quoting. You're quoting Frodo right there.
I can't remember if that's what they were talking about, Sorcerer and Gollum or not.
Well, I know they mentioned Gollum. I know the discussion they have in Moria later in the movie is the discussion that's here in the book.
Right.
But I can't remember whether when they go over the Ring history. I thought it was at this moment. Like,
come for me, Frodo. I'm always trying to figure out exactly... I'm always trying to place Elijah Wood's accent he uses for Frodo. It's kind of like an English base, you know, and like Merry and Pippin have different kind of accents. You know,
well, Merry and, well, Billy Boyd and Dominic are really British,
yeah.
I think, or they're, I'm pretty sure they're British.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
I mean, but Elijah Wood, obviously.
Elijah Wood is English, and Sean Astin is English.
Or American.
American, yeah. That's what I meant. That's what I should have said. Thank you, Ross.
See, I'm good for something.
Like, wait a minute. And here in the book, you get the first... He tells them to use the word name Underhill.
Does he tell them to do that here?
Yeah.
Does he really? Mm-hmm. No, she never picked up on that.
Well, he doesn't say it in the movie, but in the book it is said.
Oh, okay.
So.
I'm not completely stupid. These costumes are great.
Oh. Costumes.
Look at those costumes.
Production designs. Photography.
I want that costume so I can be photo for Halloween.
No, I'm just thinking about that. Because I remember the name Underhill being used in another book series.
Hmm. That always cracks me up. Get down. You just...
Okay, now here I'll talk about the least favorite thing I have with the animated Lord of the Rings. Is this complete characterization of Samwise as a bumbling fool.
Oh, right.
Thank God for Sean Astin, or as he's best known, Rudy. Thank God for him getting the character right. Thank God for Peter Jackson getting the character right. Characterization in the animated and the Bakshi version is dreadful. He's just a bumbling fool. Like, and he's, ugh, I don't even want to think about it.
Oh, I know, I remember Mr. Underhill. That's from Wheel of Time, book series. The main character poses a guy named Mr. Underhill, and I always wondered whether or not that came from, because he's a fantasy, the Robert George Lewis, well-known fantasy author, so I wonder if he pulled that name straight from there.
Something that cracks me up about both the two movies that I've seen so far, like there's like so much of people riding off on horses and saying, "I'll see you when you get there in 2 weeks on foot." I don't know. There's always that's like all throughout the movies, and I just always crack up whenever that comes into the story, it comes into play.
Damn, this film was good. Andrew Lagney, cinematographer, Oscar winner. Just magnificent job with the help of digital grading and putting some life into the colors. Now, this is a somewhat famous scene because of the fact that there was apparently a goof in that there was a car in that long shot where back where the smoke is. Apparently, you could see a car in the theatrical version.
Wow.
I don't remember ever seeing it. That may just be one of those urban movie legends, but
who's?
I think there really was supposed to be one. Obviously, they took it out.
There goes the authenticity right out the window.
But
here's
coming up is one of my favorite additions, and the fact that they see the elves leaving Middle-earth. I love this part in the books when I read it, and I really wish it had been in the movie. I was so glad that they put it in for the extended edition. Although, I really wish they'd gone as far as the book did.
Right.
Because the book actually has them talking, sitting down and talking with the elves.
Yep.
And I love that moment, but this is a nice little homage to that moment. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the choice of music, but it's very it's very appropriate for the tone of the scene.
Well, all the choral music, you know, in the film is either, you know, it's sang in Elvish or Dwarvish, and I just love that idea.
Yeah. Very good job.
I love this little smirk he gives at the end of the scene. He's like, one of those adventures that he always listens to Bilbo tell him about, and he's loving every minute of it. Well, so far.
He's despising it later.
Yeah, the whole leaving the Shire. This is played out slightly differently in the book.
Yeah. like I said earlier, there's a whole thing where it's like Merry Pippin, Sam, and Gandalf are conspiring to get Frodo out of the Shire. And there's a long period of time that, you know, they move him to one place, then they take him off, and it's very drawn out. And like you say, I think this was a change that needed to happen.
Right.
And they pulled it off very well.
And here we have Christopher Lee, who, in my opinion, is the quintessential movie villain. I mean, my favorite movie villain actor, I think, ever now.
Even though you've only seen him in, like, three movies?
Really? No.
Well, no, you're probably four with Sleepy Hollow.
I've seen him in a couple of movies now. And, I mean, you're right. I mean, I'm not going to,
we're not even counting his Hammer horror.
No, we're not. But, like, I haven't, and I'd love to see those sometimes just because I think he's just maybe not, you know, but he's just a great screen villain.
Yeah.
That's a voice right there.
I mean, that voice would haunt me if I heard it in real life. It's like, okay, I would be intimidated. I'm intimidated just listening to him. I mean, it's funny that he was in talks to play Gandalf originally.
Mm-hmm. Which wouldn't have been bad.
Wouldn't have been bad, but I mean, you know, part of the reason was, I mean, his age. You know, given how much Gandalf has to do, I mean, it would have been a bit limiting, but, I mean, I can't see anybody else as Saruman, excuse me. Now, this sort of ruins a part in the Book of the Two Towers that I really like, and I'm wondering how they're going to pull it off now, because we don't find out about the Palantir until about midway through the Two Towers, basically the last part of the Fellowship section of Two Towers. And this sort of ruins it because of the fact that you know right, because it's not until that point in the book where you realize how the connection between Sauron and Saruman was formed. And here it sort of ruins it, so I'm very curious to see how they pull that off in either the extended edition of Two Towers or what I think it will probably end up being in the Return of the King. But yeah, Yeah, Howard Shore. It's an interesting story because of the fact that for any other composer, this would be a pretty conventional score.
Yeah.
For Howard Shore, this is probably the most unconventional score he's ever written.